mixture of people here, which I think reflects the fact that the design and future of the university campus impinges on many different aspects of life in Dunedin. So it's great to see so many people from the university community, but also from the Dunedin City Council, some of the city councillors, from the regional council, from the Polytechnic, some of our architectural brethren, from the police, and you're all very welcome, and we really appreciate the interest you're showing in the development of our campus. One of the strange things about universities that's often intrigued me is that if you think of the great universities around the world, they almost all have beautiful campuses and distinguished buildings. And that's true not just of the ancient universities like Oxford and Cambridge and Harvard and Yale and Princeton. It's also true of the very small number of universities that have become world-class in a few decades during the 20th century. The two most notable examples being Stanford and Duke University in North Carolina. Whatever your architectural taste, no one could dispute that these universities have memorable buildings and campuses. And I've often wondered whether this is because these famous universities have always had the resources to be able to spend on a beautiful environment, or whether it's the beautiful environment that leads people to have great thoughts and to do outstanding academic work. And I suspect there's a vicious or a virtuous circle here. I think it's a bit of both. I think that having uplifting surroundings does actually inspire people to do great work, and that's certainly true, I think, of academic work. This university is very fortunate with the campus that we've inherited. Of course, the university moved to its present site about 130 years ago, and there are some notable buildings, as well as some which I personally wish had never happened. But generally, people who come here say, gosh, you're so lucky, it's such a wonderful campus. But we can't be complacent, and the university's been growing very rapidly. Changes in methods of teaching mean that we need more space, and similarly, our research activities have expanded greatly. So the university needs to grow physically. And just over a year ago, we decided that it was time, high time, that we had a longer-term view of how the campus should develop over the next couple of decades. The last campus master plan, believe it or not, was completed in 1980, actually my first year on the staff, and I can remember quite vividly some meetings to discuss it. And it really did seem high time to revisit that plan. The university is about three times bigger than it was then. And eventually, a firm of consultants, DEGW, were contracted to prepare a campus master plan. And Chris Alcock has been the lead person from that group. There were people from London, from Sydney, Brisbane. They had other colleagues from other centres looking at specialised areas, and also Tim Heath, the architect from Dunedin, was part of the team. And I must say they've been an enormous pleasure to work with. It's been a very stimulating period for more than a year. Many of us have really enjoyed our interactions with the planning consultants, and Chris Alcock is now going to unveil his vision for the University of Otago for the next 20 years. Chris.
Thank you, Vice-Chancellor. Is this microphone working? Yes? No?
Yes?
It is now? Excellent. Thank you. Vice-Chancellor, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. This is somewhat daunting. And I have to say from the outset that this is not my vision, it's the vision of our team. And in fact, our team is not just the consulting team that worked on the project, but our team was in fact all of the people within the university and indeed from the broader reaches of the city who participated in pulling these options together. And I have to say, it's unusual as a consultant to be invited into an organisation such as this, and indeed into a city such as this, and be given the time to be able to try and understand the very complex issues that always exist in projects such as this. Quite often master plans are something that are done because we need to get approval for a new building, so could you please do it in 2 months? Trying to understand a university in a city in that time is exceptionally difficult. So being given over a year to work on this project has been something that we have enjoyed and valued very much. This is really an overview, I was actually originally given by the Vice-Chancellor 20 minutes to talk about 15 months' worth of work, but it's been graciously extended to 30. The reason for that is because Physics 101 is coming in after us at 5 o'clock. But there is an exhibition that is being launched today simultaneously with this in the Link Building, and there's also a publication of the Master Plan, which has a lot of the detail that I'm sure many of you will be interested in. As I say, it's been a year-long process, and our consultant team, which I represent, has four principal teams. First, DGW, a firm based in London with offices throughout the world, and Tim Heath working with us very much as our local interpreter, both of the context of the master plan, but also of the essence of it as well, from architectural ecology. We've also been working with EQ Building Workshop in Auckland, who have focused specifically on sustainability, and with Space Syntax, which is a specialist movement analysis firm, who focus on looking at pedestrian and vehicular movements from a perspective of enriching campus and urban environments. The master plan has really been focused around five key issues, or five key themes. The first is the mission of the university. Where is this university going? And it was very clear to us from the start, this is not a university that is a regional service provider in tertiary education. This is a university that has an established reputation on an international basis, and one that it wants to carry forward into the future. And it intends doing that through a number of strategic imperatives, which have been identified in the university's strategic directions document. And we've founded the work on the master plan, certainly the early analysis studies in particular, but also the strategies that we've brought forward, to look for ways for the campus to support each of these imperatives. And in fact, if you look at the document that's been published by the University of the Master Plan, we talk a bit about how those connections happen between an aspiration to achieve research excellence and the way that the campus is configured and used. The next issue that we've looked at, or the next theme, of course, has been the context of the university within the city. And it is very true, certainly from our assessment, that the university and the city are entirely interdependent in many respects, not only in terms of physical and economic issues, but social and cultural as well. And it's really impossible to conceive of one without the other in both counts. Of course, the other aspect of the context of the university in the city is, of course, the city itself, and in particular, its extraordinary geometry. Developed by Charles Kettle, affectionately known as the Kettle Grid, which overlays the concept of the Edinburgh New Town into a quite wild landscape in the South Island of New Zealand. And it's actually quite an extraordinary plan in the way that it provides order and structure to the city, but it recognises the topography by having variants around the edges of that plan, most notably manifested, of course, in the octagon. The third component of the master plan has been to address the question of growth. The growth of the university over the years has been extraordinary, and in fact one of the early things that we struggled with was to identify exactly how much growth are we likely to have to accommodate in the context of the university over a 25-year period. And the figure that was arrived at in consultation by the group working with the university was a figure of 1.5% per annum compound, which doesn't sound very much, especially when you consider that I understand this year you've grown 4%, you're not following the script. So 1.5% doesn't sound like a lot, but if you apply it over 25 years, it means that you need another 100,000 square metres of space. That's a half time again of what you already have. You also need another 7,000 student places, which means they've got to have flats to live in or colleges to live in. So the consequences of that sort of growth are extraordinary. And already the city is under pressure by virtue of the way that the university has grown already. So this becomes a very important theme. The next theme that we've been looking at is the enrichment of both the campus and the community within it. And by the community, I mean the student committee, the academic community, the administrative community, all of the people that work or study or live in and around the university. And the last imperative has been to look at developing an infrastructure that will support next generation teaching, learning and research. There are tremendous pressures being applied to universities all around the world, brought about by technology and generational change, that are forcing universities to rethink the way that they provide space on campus and how they operate it. And in a lot of instances, that change is only just starting to be felt. It's really important when you're making investments in a campus infrastructure that you have the built-in flexibility to be able to accommodate change, because change increasingly will become the currency of the educational campus of the future. We started off the process with 3 months of consultation. We talked extensively with people within the university. We had workshops with both staff and students. We held a teaching and learning symposium earlier on in the process. We had a web-based campus survey which gathered 3,000 respondents from students and nearly 1,000 respondents from staff. We did observational studies of how space was actually being used across the university, and I think we looked in every room in every building eventually. I can't guarantee it. Basically to understand what's the nature of accommodation currently being provided, how's it being afforded, is it performing, what are the sorts of issues related to it. We've had a lot of meetings and workshops subsequent to that consultation with both internal and external stakeholders. And most importantly, we met with the Campus Master Plan Steering Committee, chaired by the Vice-Chancellor, every month, and actually workshopped through those issues. And that's why this is called Options for the Strategic Development of the Campus. This is not the answer. This is a whole series of opportunities and initiatives that could provide the growth the university needs in a way that makes sense over time. The scope of the master plan was, in fact, not just Dunedin, it was also for Christchurch and Wellington. Now, the Christchurch and Wellington campuses are a fundamentally different proposition to the issues faced here. They're much smaller, they're almost entirely based in health sciences, and they're embedded in the local hospitals in each of those two cities. So there is a master plan that's been developed for Christchurch, for instance, and also another one for Wellington, that are specific to those particular sites and looking specifically at what are the opportunities and needs for those two campuses to be able to grow over the master plan period. In Dunedin, we established a number of key principles, if you will, for the master plan design. The first and most important from a physical perspective was to consolidate what we call a compact and walkable campus as one of the most fundamental attributes of this university. Wherever we went, whoever we talked to, people talked about the importance of collegiality within this university. And collegiality is impossible to maintain unless you have an intensity of activity that is brought about by keeping the campus compact rather than allowing it to sprawl. The next principle was to provide for flexibility in the accommodation of growth. You'll see in the master plan that, with a very few exceptions, there isn't any reference to which building belongs to which department or division, because we don't know. We don't know what the priorities will be. We don't know what the needs will be over the 25-year period. So we've identified development opportunities without prescribing specific uses. The third component of it, related to achieving a compact and walkable campus, is what I'm politely calling remediation of underperforming buildings. Now, what that means is that you break the first year law of university planning, which means never demolish. It doesn't matter how bad it is, it's still providing space. Now, the problem with that sort of approach, and universities that adopt that approach of never demolish, tend to die from the inside out. Because the older facilities are the ones that are at the centre of the campus, the newer and better and more contemporary facilities are the ones on the edges. So what happens is the university, as I said, dies from the inside out. It's very important in the case of this university that that not happen. And you will see in the master plan a number of sites, a number of buildings that don't look like they currently do. And that's because they've been remediated. Another really important theme of this master plan, which emerged very early on and which has been constant throughout, is the water of the Leith, which is an absolutely extraordinary asset, which at the moment is being sadly underutilised. And in fact, I'm not sure that this city really understands how wonderful an asset that could be. It varies from being quaint and interesting to being an open sewer as it starts moving down towards the harbour front. And it is an extraordinary opportunity for the university and for the city to create a public and civic amenity, not just for the people within the campus, but for the whole city. And so you'll see that as a theme in the master plan throughout. From an academic and research perspective, the Master Plan recognises the importance of the academic departments as the foundation of teaching and research in the university. The idea that research is completely embedded in teaching, and they are both sit within the realms of the academic departments. Now, this actually poses difficulties in terms of providing flexibility and synergies, because when you want to co-locate research activities, that means that you've got to also co-locate those departments that are attached to them. It's easier to build research institutes than to stick all the research science institutes in one building. But it was very clear that that was inappropriate in this university. The next principle is the concept of supporting informal interaction and learning. You have in this university a world-class facility in the Information Services Building and Link Building. There is simply no other facility that we know of as that is good at providing informal interaction, social and self-directed study opportunities for students. And that's something that not only needs to be preserved, but it also needs to be enriched and renewed. The building is already at capacity. It's clear, even walking through this morning, it was packed. And that's because it's so successful. So one of the things we need to do is to not put them at the bottom of the needs list and say, well, you're right, you're done, it'll be your turn in 40 years' time. All of the facilities need to be looked at from a perspective of constant renewal and performance monitoring. And it's one of them. We have also developed an environmental sustainability framework for the university to mesh with its capital works plans and with its operational plans. You'll see that there is a summary of that of the sustainability framework within the master plan document. There is a broader document as well in the appendix which talks about a sustainability going forward, as I say, in the context of capital works and in terms of operations. And finally, the other theme that's emerged, and the Vice-Chancellor referenced it in his article this morning in the Daily Times, is that theoretically our commission extends to the campus boundaries, which means it theoretically has nothing to do with the residential precincts around the university campus. But in fact, from our perspective, the residential experience of this university is one of its great strengths and one of its most competitive advantages, certainly against other universities in New Zealand. And that reputation, in our opinion, is seriously at risk. Now, I think you all know what we're talking about. The fact is that it is extremely unfortunate that the flats around this university have become such attractive investments, because they are starting to enshrine an urban structure, a social structure, that you could say is not exactly what you'd desire to have at the front door of your university. It's a hugely complex issue. Covers a huge range of stakeholders. In the master plan, we've suggested that it should be the subject of continuing study as to how that can be addressed. And it is being addressed already. I'm not saying it isn't, but it is an incredibly important thing from a campus perspective. The master plan itself is structured as a series of frameworks, and I won't go into all of them, but they deal with specific areas of interest. The spatial framework, landscape, movement, the campus hubs, which I'll explain in a minute, a cultural framework, social and retail, teaching and learning, academic and research, administration and services, and residential. Each of them prescribe policies or strategies for moving forward across the next 25 years. I will talk about a few of them specifically, though. The spatial framework is really about the spaces between buildings. We tend to think of our university campuses as the buildings that sit within them. Increasingly, we're just as interested, if not more so, in the spaces between buildings. You have some extraordinarily beautiful spaces. You also have an excess of car park. And car parks are very useful things. But in terms of amenity, in terms of outlook, in terms of enrichment of the university, they do absolutely nothing. So one of the things that we've looked at in the context of the master plan is to develop a sequence of spaces between buildings that are connected, both in terms of built activity, that is people activity, and in landscape as well. There is separately a landscape framework, which Tim Heath has developed, which looks at the biophysical campus environment, not just from a perspective of picturesque landscape, but how does the external space work? What story does it tell? What amenity does it provide? How does it relate to the university environment as a whole, both from a perspective of native vegetation and the existing the existing exotic vegetation. The MOVE work framework is about access to and within and through the university, and you'll see in the final master plan one of the key elements is to create a number of major arteries within the campus, one of which is in Union Street, one of which follows the banks of the Leith, one of which is in Albany Street, basically connecting George Street down to the harbour at the eastern end of the campus and then back into the city. Another important aspect of that movement access and access framework is campus hubs. Now, campus hub is basically like a local neighbourhood village that you would find normally in a town. And it provides supplementary services to those available in the town centre. So the idea of a precinct hub already exists in part in the St David's Centre, where you have, in close proximity, breakout informal spaces, teaching seminar spaces, the science library sort of close by, and informal gathering spaces. It also exists in a major way in the ISB and in the Union Building adjacent. We're proposing that that be augmented and that there be three major hubs on the campus, one of which is down in the Health Sciences Precinct, focused loosely on the Hunter Centre as it currently is, the other one up at St David, and another major one serving the eastern end of the campus down on the Wycliffe Press site. The master plan itself is a series of linked precincts. Now, we thought of the whole thing as one coherent whole, but for ease of documentation and for study, it was easier to break it into specific precincts. So what I'm going to do now is to just take you through some of the initiatives and recommendations in each of those precincts. The first one is the central precinct, as we call it, which is based on the ISB, the Union Building and the Union Lawn. And this really is the social, recreational, informal heart or living room of the campus. There are aspects of it that are performing spectacularly well, of which, as I said, the ISB and the Link Building are key. The Union Building is already planned to be renovated, and our recommendation is that the Union Lawn needs to be restructured and that the buildings that currently sit around it, Smith Hills Gymnasium, the Union Court and the others, be remediated. The problem with those buildings, there's nothing fundamentally wrong with them, but they contribute nothing in terms of life, activity, engagement with the space around it. And that Union Lawn, picturesque as it is at the moment, could be a fabulous town square for this university. But in order for that to work, it needs to be completely surrounded by activities that people want to use and do use on a daily basis. More retail spaces, more food and beverage spaces, perhaps on upper level specialist areas for postgraduate students or staff clubs or whatever. The whole idea is it becomes the town square of the university. Associated with that is the creation of a podium, a glazed podium, at the base of the Richardson Building, both to open up views through to the Leith, but also to provide more breakout space for the Castle Lecture Theatres adjacent. And we're proposing also to expand the breakout areas of the Castle Lecture Theatres as well. In this area as well, on the top right, you'll see there's another site that's been remediated. It's the site that's occupied by the Home Sciences Building, and you would see that we're proposing that all of the other buildings there be removed. That is the Archway Lecture Theatres, Gregory Building, the psychology huts just clustered near that bank, the temporary ones, and most importantly, the Information Services Technology Building. Now, the reason for doing this is twofold. First of all, that is strategically an incredibly important site. It sits geographically at the heart of the whole university. The buildings that are sitting on it are either beyond their use-by date, are not sufficiently flexible, or are inappropriate for the importance of that site. Now, the idea is to remove them and to replace them with a new teaching and learning centre. That is a series of seminar spaces and lecture theatres specifically configured to be used by all departments for next generation teaching and learning. So in other words, as well as having traditional lecture theatres like this, in that new facility we would create a whole range of different types of spaces that provide different types of teaching and learning experiences that staff who want to use them and have access to those sort of facilities can actually use. And they'd be located geographically at the heart of the university. Now, I might add at this point, it was not without some considerable discussion that we talked about demolishing all these buildings. And I'm very grateful to Mr. McCoy for allowing me to even talk about the idea of the Archway Lecture Theatres. We have shown throughout the master plan alternative master plans. We were encouraged by the university to be aspirational, to show how it could be, but we are also, in that master plan, therefore showing buildings on sites the university doesn't currently own. We are also showing buildings on sites that are occupied by other buildings, like the Gregory Building, for instance. And so the master plan has a series of sub-strategies which enshrine the principles behind each precinct in terms of their development without either acquiring those sites or without demolishing those buildings. So it's really like a maximum impact and a minimum impact scheme. The other thing that we're proposing in this particular precinct is the rehabilitation of the arts building and its extension towards the east as well. And by rehabilitation, I mean completely strip it back to its structure, create a new facade around it, and completely rebuild it internally. The North Central Precinct is interesting because it straddles the Leith, and it really has two primary sub-precincts. The first on the left is the Sciences Precinct, and we are proposing that there would be significant benefit to the university, to the campus, and to the Sciences Division if Science 2 was demolished and replaced by a bigger but lower building that basically connects up each of Science 1, Biochemistry, and Science 3. Because at the moment, those buildings sit next to each other, but they're completely disconnected from each other. So the idea is to create a new building that has breezeways through so that you still retain the views through to the registry, to the clock tower building, but creates two new landscape courts internally, quadrangles, between them. The other thing that we're proposing in the clock tower precinct is the rehabilitation of those three buildings. That is the clock tower building, the geology building, and the archway building. That is the heritage fabric, if you will, of the university. Most of the university's history resides in those buildings, and yet they are not particularly accessible to the public. We've recommended that geology move to a new purpose design facility, that they move out of that building, and that building be restored and returned to general teaching use. We've also recommended the administrative functions in the basement of the clock tower be moved out of that building and an interpretive centre for the whole university to be created in the basement of that building in lieu. And we've also recommended the creation of a new performing arts centre for the Departments of Music and Theatre Studies that will free up the use of Marrimah Hall and in particular the Allen Theatre to allow their restoration as great rooms of the university as opposed to performing venues. The East Central Precinct, which is the one immediately to the west of the Arts Building, currently occupied on the left-hand side by Property Services and on the right-hand side by Wycliffe Press, are the two major development opportunities for the university. And we're proposing that there be significant academic research facilities built on those two sites. You'll note in particular that we've managed to acquire a lot of the block that the university doesn't currently own. This is highly aspirational. There is a plan if it doesn't work, if those properties are not available. But you can see one of the key elements of this plan is to basically redevelop the whole south bank of the Leith, looking over the water, in the sun, with a new major public mall running west to east, linking down from the ISB. The other development we're proposing, which involves acquisition, is on the other side of the Leith from Wycliffe Press, on the site currently occupied by the executive residence, to purchase the remaining blocks that the university doesn't currently own and create an expansion of both residential facilities, possibly as an extension of the executive residence, and also, this is top right, and also expanded academic facilities, maybe associated with the Department of Commerce, maybe not. The North Central Zone, immediately north of St David Street, we're not proposing any significant work because we believe there is tremendous value in the restoration of that whole precinct between Castle Street and the Leith, the preservation of all those villas, for the university to acquire the villas it doesn't currently own, and to look at a new use, potentially residential, potentially for childcare, within that precinct. west of the Sciences Precinct on the Cumberland Court site, to the west of Cumberland Street. The university owns almost all of that block. We're proposing that that is a long-term expansion site for the university, that it be retained for its current use for the time being, but that if the university needs space beyond an additional 100,000 square metres, that is the logical space place for the university to expand to. If we go south of the Museum Reserve to what we call South Central, we come to the precinct that is immediately north of the Dunedin Hospital. This is where we get into serious remediation. One of the things that we really struggled with was, and was brought to our attention innumerable times, was the issue of the S-bends and the state highways. The dislocation they represent between the main campus and the health sciences precinct and the rest of the city. The problem with the traffic moving through it, the speed it does and the volumes it does through those two raceways. The issue of pedestrian safety associated with them, all of which are bad news stories. Now, it has to be recognised, if it wasn't for that one-way pair, there would still be traffic going down Castle Street. So the university has benefited enormously from the creation of those streets. But it has to also say that it's now at a point where it is starting, because of the growth of the university in particular, and as that growth continues, it will make it even more difficult. It is becoming increasingly difficult to sustain both the urban implications and the safety implications of those highways. And so what we have recommended is that the university work with the city to look at the feasibility of removing those S-bends and potentially even returning those one-way streets into two-way streets. This triggers a whole lot of issues. They are dealt with in part in the master plan report, but it is in fact an area that requires considerable study. The benefit to the city and the university is that we fix that urban tear. There's 1.2 hectares of land released by removing those S-bends, either for academic development, such as being proposed here, or for residential development on the site to the east. Now, if you're trying to get your bearings here, the grey building in the middle with the triangle, that's the School of Physiotherapy. That's where the road is at the moment. Now, as a demonstration of having the minimum impact plan, what that looks like if we can't remove the S-bends is that. So there is still opportunity for development, there is still opportunities for the health sciences precinct in particular to build new research and teaching facilities in that block, but obviously the impact, the amount of area that's generated, the urban result, the urban outcomes are significantly different. I should also add at this point too, because we recognise this is controversial, there's a model of this master plan that you'll see in the Link building. The section that has it in it is reversible, so you can spin it. I think it's set at the moment to look without the S-bends. In the hospital precinct itself, there's two separate initiatives that we're proposing. The first is to redevelop the block currently occupied by the Adams by the Sayers and Welcome Building and look at reconfiguring the Adams Building to create a new medical research facility that is linked by a new circulation corridor system into the existing research buildings that align in Great King Street. As a separate initiative, we're proposing over on the eastern side of Cumberland Street that marine science and surveying move into new purpose-built facilities in the heart of the university campus proper, and the buildings that they currently occupy be demolished and used for additional residential facilities for both Haywood and or Cumberland colleges. At the eastern end of the campus, we've proposed, again, to achieve a compact and walkable campus that basically there is no academic facilities located south of the Robertson Library. That means moving the teaching facilities that are currently in the College of Education into new purpose-built facilities closer to the heart of the campus. That will actually release that site for redevelopment, and we've suggested to the university it is an ideal site by virtue of its configuration and its location for one or more new residential colleges, potentially using the existing buildings. It's a fabulous location for residential colleges. It's a terrible location for academic facilities because it's so far away. You're familiar, of course, with the University Plaza development, which is currently under development, which will form the termination of the campus at its eastern extremity. And you'll see also at the bottom of this slide the Radio Networks building, which is currently being used by the School of Music. We're proposing that two new 200-seat performance venues be built there. This is not a new theatre for Dunedin. These are teaching facilities for the university. This is an idea that was promoted by the Department of Music, and to us it makes eminent sense, because not only does it provide new purpose-built facilities, but it allows Marama Hall and the Allen Theatre to be released, at least in part, for other uses as well. And also, a development of that nature down there would sit very appropriately with the Hocken Library, forming a little mini civic precinct, if you will, at the eastern end of the campus. This is a view as it could be. I think one of the things that's most significant about this master plan is there are some terribly important things about it that are opportunities that we really recommend the city should not lose. And it would have to be said that one of them is the Leith. The opportunity to revitalise that river, to create tremendous civic amenity on either side of it, and for the university to build new structures, new facilities, bringing more life into that part of the campus, is significant. Similar, you'll see top left, the opportunities in the health sciences precinct to create a medical research and teaching facility of consequence. And also the potential to redevelop the sciences precinct facing onto the river with a new building replacing Science 2. And they're just some of the initiatives. I don't know if John Patrick's worked out how much this is going to cost yet. I'm not sure if 25 years is enough. But as I said, that's a very brief overview that I hope you found interesting. And as I say, the exhibition and the publication that has been made will be made available to you. We'll tell the story in greater detail. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris. That was a very crisp presentation of an enormous amount of work. There is a bit of time for questions, so I hope you would be prepared to answer some questions. In a few minutes, before the physics lecture starts, we'll go over to the Link building, where you can see the exhibition. You will all receive a copy of the report, but here's an opportunity for people to give Chris and Property Services the benefits of your wisdom. So any questions, please, or comments? Yes, Peter Enwistle.